Hello, I'm Ray Reich, founder and CEO of RevOps Squared, and your host of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. We talk to a wide variety of B2B, SaaS, and cloud thought leaders, executives, investors, and people just like you to discuss the metrics and benchmarks they use to make metrics-informed decisions. Now on to today's show. Welcome to today's episode of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. Today, we are joined by Julius Solaris, the founder of Bold Push and a former VP of marketing at Hopin. Today, we'll be covering three main topic areas with Julius. First, the evolution of events in the B2B technology industry. Second, event-led growth as a strategy for B2B SaaS and technology companies. And third, the intersections of events, community, content, and thought leadership. With that, Julius, would you mind taking a moment to give a brief overview of your journey to becoming our guest on the Metrics That Measure Up podcast?
Well, first off, thanks for having me, Ray. It's such a pleasure. I feel honored with such a great roster of guests to be on the show. Very quickly, I'm an events person. I've been in events most of my life pre-work. And then when I started working, it was my first gig. I was a marketing event marketing person for conferences where I come from in Italy. And then my life career brought me to write about events and become sort of a media person for the events industry. I started a blog called EventMB that then became a full media platform. And I sold that platform in 2019 to Skift, which is a much larger travel media entity. Is now called Skift Meetings. And also in between that, also founded a small event technology company that I sold as well. So I exited two businesses in the event space. More recently, I've been in marketing capacity, first with Wapcard, a large application for exhibition trade shows. And then more recently, I became VP of marketing for Hopin during the hypergrowth moment of raising $1 billion. So yeah, lots of stories with that. And for the past year, I've been a consultant, a researcher for our industry, as well as creating content online and a full-time creator as well for all the topics that revolve around B2B events and marketing, as well as, you know, whatever the future of events look like.
Well, that's why I was so interested in talking to you, Julius. Not only do you have this amazing background, but it's your vision for where the event industry can go. And our audience is 100% B2B technology, B2B SaaS executives, CEOs, CFOs, CROs, and CMOs. So what I wanted to do in these first couple minutes was just a real brief bit of history on how you've seen events being used in the B2B technology industry, a little bit about yesterday, a lot more about the last couple years, and then maybe what you see happening over the next 2 to 3 years, because I saw you just posted on LinkedIn today your kind of top 10 predictions for events in the rest of the 20s. So go ahead.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Listen, I've been commenting on this for like 20 years. So I've been through a lot. We've been through the mortgage crisis and, you know, the role of events usually during a recession type of environment, which is similar to what we're living with right now. Events are the first to go. Events were the first to go, I would say. That's something that has changed as well in a sense of how the events industry and events in general position themselves. That has a lot to do with what happened more recently in the events industry. The past 3 years have been the most disruptive for the events. We've been at the core of, you know, the impact of the pandemic in the goods and bads, right? First, with the growth of virtual events as the only alternative to meet, right? So the spotlight, everybody, there was what I call the biggest advertisement for the events industry ever. Because all of a sudden, all these amazing events we could not attend for a lot of us were free to attend online, and we got to experience what it meant to be exposed to these amazing communities and content online. So big advertising moment, hypergrowth. I was involved with it, obviously being a Hopin for some time. And so, and then right after that, we're in a phase right now where the pendulum is kind of swinging back aggressively towards in-person. We're actually out March, April 2023, out of the fastest growing month for the in-person events industry ever. We've had $6.2 billion worth of acquisitions between technology companies and event planning companies being acquired by private equity or between each other. So there's been a lot of movement. And right now, I guess where we are, there's a new definition for your audience specifically. I think a lot of CMOs really got to experience the power of events for the first time during the pandemic. Yes, they did webinars. Yes, they did their user conferences. But like this vision of pulling it all together sort of came across during the pandemic with a lot of force. And all of a sudden, we were seeing what the result of doing virtual and in-person together could be on the longer term and in perspective. So we're redefining. There's no definition right now. The concept of events has been never as fluid as it is right now. We're talking about hybrid, in-person, virtual, async, recorded, repurposing. So there's a lot happening.
Okay. So when people are talking about event-led growth, you know, we've got product-led growth in the B2B SaaS industry. We have this thing of community-led growth. And now people are talking about event-led growth. Do you even know what the hell is event-led growth, right? Because you, like you said, there's not even a common definition of what events are today in the industry. So how do you define event-led growth? Or is it just a concept?
Yes, I would say the concept of event-led growth is like a go-to-market strategy that sees events and, you know, the full spectrum of events, I would say, at the core of your go-to-market strategy, at the core of your engagement strategy with your customer base. You know, this is like probably becoming, gaining a lot of speed right now for the contextual environment we're living in. One where social media is in crisis. We don't know what's happening with Twitter. You know, yes, there's a lot of attention on TikTok, but also banning potential. So there's a lot of uncertainty around social media. There's AI coming up. And also we're facing a commoditization of marketing to a certain extent where, you know, ChatGPT is making all our effort in a sense in the future looking exactly the same. So how do you create difference? My thesis with the event-led growth is that events remain the most personal, human-friendly way of interacting with a brand. And it's really the ability, is the opportunity to connect at a personal level. And it's been traditionally non-scalable because it was mostly in person with some level of webinars. Today, we have the tool set to make it become a complete strategy of interaction with our audience, not only in terms of the interaction one-to-one or one-to-many, but also as a content creation opportunity for the rest of the business. And that's, I'm excited about that.
Now, that's something I'm very interested in, the content creation opportunity. But let me go back to events, because, you know, you talked about the one-to-one or one-to-many, and it was really a vendor-centric, I think, definition. But to me, one of the beautiful things about events is if we as a event sponsor can get everyone to come together and talk to each other so that customer A and customer B or prospect A and prospect C are like birds of a feather that flock together. And they actually find more value interacting with their peer group than with the vendor directly. And to me, that's where community might even supersede events. So tell me a little bit about how you think about community and events and how they interact.
Absolutely. So there's a strong link between the two concepts, right? If you think about communities as how they form, and one of the most sort of standardized form of communities is professional associations, for example. Their business model is their annual meeting, right? Where they come together in person. That's where the biggest bulk of the revenue is done for a community. So there's a strong link between the two, and communities form as a result of meeting all the time. You see a lot of sort of movements have become. Biggest example for the AI community, just a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco, there was this big Woodstock AI meeting, right? You know, born out of a message from a founder on Twitter saying, I'm coming to San Francisco. Would somebody want to meet? And 5,000 people show up with llamas and is, you know, a mayhem is happening all of a sudden. So that is like a seminal moment for a community to come together, one that people refer to and remember. So there's an interchangeable sort of concept between the two sort of approaches to going to market. And they need each other dramatically Because events by themselves, they tend to be very limited in time. That's a problematic aspect of events. They're just like the 2-3 days hype, and then you have to start from scratch again. The community element, if you're able to catalyze that interest and opportunity in a platform, in a way to put it all together, then you have a constant way of engaging with your members by means of events or discussion that creates that sustainability where marketing is unnecessary. Like in communities where belonging is so strong, you don't need to market events. People just show up because they love it so much.
Interesting. So you almost talked about events being a continuous process versus a one-time thing. Because in my old school mind, I'm like, an event, well, I have this, you know, annual user group conference, or I have this quarterly roundtable session in New York and Los Angeles, et cetera. But you're talking about maybe leveraging all this virtual and immersive technology and have that continuous engagement with the community while it builds up to an in-person big event. Is that kind of one of
it
the
is. Processes? And let me give you an example of that. A very basic example that doesn't feature any particular type of technology. A lot of your listeners here in SaaS may know the SaaStr event, right? Happening in San Francisco, that all of a sudden is happening in Barcelona, in London, in Singapore. So 4 in-person events for the community to come together. And then I was on their webinar a couple of weeks ago because they do weekly webinars as well. And now the virtual component is kind of keeping the community together to establish that thought leadership that then happens during the event and acts as a marketing opportunity to get more people on board, that sort of top to mid funnel type of activity that then will convert more attendees to the actual in-person event. And I feel that's the opportunity with brands here. Can we create more touch points and then eventually meet in person? That becomes the premium experience, right?
Yeah. Do you think brands, so once again, a lot of SaaS B2B companies out here, and they're like, we want to build a community. Maybe they want to sell to CFOs more, or they want to sell to CMOs. So they're all talking about, I want to build a community. And that community, maybe I can get together once a year for an event. Do you think B2B companies should build more of a community through education and fostering relationships and not trade shows or marketing their own software? It's truly thought leadership, but the ROI may not pay off for 3, 4, 5 years.
Absolutely. Well, listen, every time you show up at trade shows in general, I mean, it's a great moment if the trade show is big. And it's sort of having like, it's that moment where everybody's there and you need to be there. I think it's important to be there. But like those mid shows that a lot we used to spend a lot of budget on, I feel they will eventually die, and companies will own their audiences. They will own a lot of their event programs because tools are accessible today. You know, it's not as it used to be. Yes, maybe the in-person experience still remains premium with cost and inflation high right now. It's still challenging to do in-person events for a lot, especially in tech. But I would say that you now have a plethora of tools available to constantly engage in one-to-one, and not only for education purposes, Ray. Let me tell you, like, there's a bunch of content out there. There's too much content out there. We probably don't need more content. What we strive for, and the reason why in-person events are having their biggest year, sometimes in 70 years of tracking, this is the biggest year ever, not pre-post-pandemic ever. So this is why Las Vegas in February had the biggest month ever. So what I'm saying is that people want connection. People want to talk to other people. People don't want to listen to another expert. I can go on YouTube and have it all. I can go on Spotify and listen to all the podcasts I want to, or Apple. So what I'm trying to say here is that if you create opportunity for connection, then you're onto something.
I'm going to give you a hot take here because I went to SaaStr 10 years ago. I didn't go for a couple of years before COVID. And I said, okay, last year I'll go again. So Julius, here was my, and I think what Jason's done is incredible, but it was too big. I want to talk to my peer group, right? And there it's like, okay, there's a lot of vendors in their trade shows, a lot of salespeople. Yeah, you have some of the, you know, really big names that have been successful. They went $1 billion, but okay, I'm going to go talk to people in that 50 to 100 million ARR group who are running go-to-market teams, sales, marketing, and customer success. And that venue doesn't give me that kind of more intimate real peer group. And I think that's missing in a lot of these mega events. How do I really get to talk to those 10, 20, 30 people who are truly my peers?
Yeah. So there's two answers to that. And, you know, the team at Sasser is very well aware of what you're talking about, you know, and they work constantly on mass customization of that experience. But there's only so much you can do. Let's be frank, in like a mega event, like a bigger event, which Sasser is not, by the way, because like in our industry, it's like a smaller, like it's a medium to small event. You know, a mega event is like 120,000 people. So that becomes a little bit more intense, even for business. But what I'm trying to say here is that at a certain stage, you got to lose a little bit on the customization, but you can create touch points through the year. Now we have the tools to do smaller groups, masterminds, and capitals, make it become revenue opportunities or brand opportunities if you're a marketer. To do that, but also Sasser sparks a lot of satellite events around it, right? So a lot of people, like I go to South by Southwest, like, yes, I go to the main show for the serendipitous moment of bumping into someone and going outside of my comfort zone. But where I thrive is like where I get invited to go to the VIP dinner and or to the cocktail hour with the top or to the very specific vertical session organized by a sponsor. So that satellite of mini events, micro events, as we call it in the industry, that creates an extra value for these events. And we're seeing that trend exploding.
And in fact, I went to an event that Nathan Lotka, who's kind of a personality in the SaaS industry, had in New York here about 3 weeks ago called SaaS Open. And one of the things I love that they did is all the sponsors had their own private dinners. So you could choose to go to one of the sponsors' dinners who maybe it was a theme or a topic that you were really interested in. And I really love that because the sponsors, like, they had more intimate, you know, 10, 20 person meetings versus one big dinner with 500 people.
And that's a strategy for your audience as well. If you're thinking about how do I participate in Sasser next time, I would say, and probably Jason is going to hate me for this, but get the smaller booth space. Be clever about how you show up at that event, you know, with an idea or something that is sketchy, but like invest all of your budget in creating a micro experience around the event because you have undivided attention. Plug that experience during the event at your booth. Don't try to sell your software. Get them to come to the dinner.
That is great advice. And then speaking of advice, we have a lot of 10 to 50 million revenue size SaaS companies who are listening audience. And right now, of course, everyone is worried about budget and marketing and events. Like you said, one of the first things to go. But they're like, you know, I'm really thinking about this community-led, event-led. What advice would you give them to say, hey, you don't do events yet. You don't really have a community. Here's the two or three things you should do over the next 12 to 24 months to invest, put your toe in the water, and learn what it can be.
So I would say that probably, especially for the virtual part that developed during the pandemic, which I followed firsthand in terms of development and growth being part of these companies, I would say that the biggest opportunity that we have in front of us is the virtual component of events, right? Especially when events were the first to go, we didn't have such a strong virtual events presence in terms of platforms and capabilities of these platforms. Today, we're in a different world. You know, you can do so many things. There's so much going on with these platforms, hundreds of them that are desperate to get your business, by the way. So it's the perfect moment to invest in some of those platforms right now. So having that platform, you can start from zero as well. You can start for free if you want, like on a Zoom call, like literally, you know, that start, that can incept it. You know, it's an event design problem. It's not like how you design the event. It's never the platform that you use, by the way. You can make like a Zoom call super engaging if you want to. But that's a separate topic. What I'm trying to get to is that eventually, you know, by the use of these platforms, you can totally engage in like with your, you know, creating a group of people that sort of start working with you. But also think about the content opportunity, Ray, that comes out of that. I do virtual events for my community. Sometimes I sell them, sometimes I do them for free. I take those transcripts from the events, I run them through ChatGPT. I counted from an hour event, I get 121 insights, individual insights that I can repurpose in a million different ways on social media, on LinkedIn, on blog posts, and the likes. This is without the Q&A. Like if you include the Q&A, you can get probably 200 insights in an hour. It's just like an incredible amount of original content that you produce with these sessions. So think strategically on how you can maximize your budget
That's really good advice. I'm going to pivot a little bit. So we do benchmarking all day long. And I actually did my first pretty big virtual event last year. And I was talking to a lot of other people who did virtual events, all virtual. And it's like, okay, well, let's create these lounges and booths where people with common interests go, or you have the vendor, like a trade show booth, and very little traffic. And as I talk to other virtual events, they say that the booths get very little traffic. So is that just an old school physical world strategy that just doesn't work virtually, Julius?
So the problem with that happened during the pandemic is like we can't access in-person events anymore. Let's try to replicate that model online. And obviously it didn't work. Not only for the booth part, also the networking connection part still hasn't been cracked yet by the platform. How do you facilitate that interaction, that serendipity that you have at in-person events? Mostly because everything was rushed and done, you know, they were building the boat as they were sailing, right? So it was like crazy to help in that way. But like what works, there's a report that I've worked on this very specific topic, like what type of activation work during virtual event. They have to be content-led. They have to be content-led. That's where the biggest opportunity is. There's a number of tools that have been developed since you probably tried it a year ago that actually give you more accountability in terms of what's happening during those sessions and numbers you can transfer to your sponsors, contacts of people. But then again, it's also communication matter here. We found out that exhibitors wouldn't follow up with the leads that they got, even the few ones that they got. So, you know, again, it's not only the platform to blame. Sometimes there needs to be clear communication on the rule of engagements that the exhibitors have to have on these platforms. How do they come across? How do they need to participate in the chat and be active? And, you know, it's like being on LinkedIn, right? You use the comment section, you're right, you say something smart and clever and people start to liking it. You get exposed to more people and then you start a conversation, right? We used to do it on LinkedIn. Why shouldn't we not do it on a virtual event platform?
I love what you said just about 30 seconds ago. It was those breakouts need to be content led. The people want to go because it's got to be content that's meaningful to them that maybe they can walk away with and apply their learnings and their job the same day, same week. I love the fact, don't make it vendor-led, make it content-led.
Totally. Vendors, you'll find that they have great opinions as well, like because obviously they have their own content programs, so they can come up with great opportunities, or they can facilitate discussions. I've seen some incredible activations done online where the sponsor was just like, you know, the moderator of a session between attendees. So that's incredible. The people start introducing themselves. So you start getting to know their persona. That's pretty powerful. You cannot do that at an in-person trade show where everybody's shouting, trying to get you in and get your scan your badge. You know, it's always like super awkward, right? If you think about, you know, that dynamic in a trade show environment, like who likes that? You know, we do it because we have to do it, but nobody enjoys it. So probably virtual is a much closer environment to do more personal communication.
You know, we're talking about a lot of strategic things. Let me zoom down to a 1 foot sea level. And that is, you know, Clubhouse was really big during the early days of the pandemic. So I think about these virtual events where you want to engage the audience. And of course, you always get the chat and the Q&A. But sometimes when you open up the mic, you lose control of the session a little bit. So what's your perspective on making virtual events with audience participation? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's different levels, right? So it depends on the number of people. I used to run during the pandemic. I was still in my media capacity at the beginning of it. And we ran like 5-6 events with 60,000 people in total in the events industry, B2B. You have to think the biggest show in the events industry is like 10,000 people. So we're like six times that. So never seen before numbers. And I took the chat off. I was like, there's not going to be any chat. I'm directing where the conversation is going. If people want to sort of inject into the conversation, they have to think about what they're going to say and use the Q&A module. And, you know, we're going to just pick the right questions that are in line with that. And so for large numbers, wild chats, they kind of like start go out of control a little bit. For smaller meetings where, you know, there's 30, 40, 50 people, I sometimes open the video for everybody to be on stage and to come. I think strong moderation is like key to this. Like not having someone that knows how to handle these dynamics is the first problem. Like you can immediately tell that someone is inexperienced and they don't know where to step in. Sometimes you literally have to talk over people and regain control. And that takes a lot of confidence to do, to be honest. So yeah, you have to know where it depends on the size, and you have to have a strong, skilled moderator in place, someone that knows how to direct and give clear instructions as well to the audience before you open up the Q&A or the videos or the mics. This is what we expect. Sponsors, don't pitch yourself. Audience, be on topic. So try to give sort of a path to people. Otherwise, people will go in a tangent, not because they try to be disruptive, but because they're thinking in their little house, in their house with their computer and cat and whatever.
Right. Okay. We did this a little bit at the beginning when we kind of asked you to talk a little bit about how the event industry has evolved, but pull up that crystal ball now and say, okay, I know I'm talking to a B2B technology audience, primarily B2B SaaS. What's your top three predictions on how the event landscape will change and evolve over the next 3 to 5 years for our?
Actually, I have a real crystal ball with me here. I'll show you after this. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the big ones. I feel, first off, the technology enabling events is going to change dramatically in the next year or so. With AI having a direct impact, we're one of those industries that are very, very open to the disruption of AI, because all of the tools that are available right now, they're glorified Excel spreadsheets in most cases. So that sort of declarative approach that ChatGPT has, meaning prompt, do this, that's going to change events dramatically. Meaning, ChatGPT, create a website for my event with this complex registration and just like an input that is going to give you a result. Right now, it takes hours and hours of work to do. So that's going to have a massive impact. So keep an eye on the technology for events, because that's going to change dramatically in the next year. Now, the second one is, as I mentioned to you earlier, the role of AI is also to standardize marketing. And so the level of trust that you have with different formats of marketing, very low for ads, very low for anything text-based in marketing. Every white paper is going to look the same. Trust me, like 90% of those, unless you have like unprecedented research or insight, and amazing if you do that, but like the rest of it, nobody's going to trust that anymore. Like, where is this coming from, right? And then I would say that real-time interaction, live interaction, as we're doing right now, you can't fake that. You can't fake that. Not yet. I mean, I'm open to that. But like in person, even more. Like in person, we need to be there. And at some stage, when you're closing $1 million deal, I mean, how do you do that, right? So being in person is going to be very, very important, and it's going to have a lot of prominence going forward. Then the third biggest opportunity here is, I would say, the role of content. Content becomes the business model for events, I would say. So as I mentioned to you, so recording a session means reselling that session, gating that session for later consumption. And so we think about the Netflix of events, right? Where you can go in and have a library of content that is available to you. Making that content in a million formats for all of your social media and content opportunities, repurposing it, whether it's short videos. Now we have automated tools that do it for you. So we can see more of that happening, repurposing that constantly. So that recreates, that redefines the whole model of events that traditionally were an exchange of fresh air, as I call it. We talk to each other and it's gone. What was it? The ROI has been intangible for so many years. But now we have a way to make it tangible. And actually, my thesis is that it's actually going to change the way we produce content online.
Yeah, when you were saying that, Julius, I was thinking, I think about the flywheel metaphor, that content being at the center, and then you have your events kind of around it, your virtual events, your in-person events, but then the community around that, because the content drives why people come to the event, and the community drives why other people come to the event. So I love what you're thinking.
For sure. And the changes are happening before our eyes. The power at which these things are happening, like a meetup that translates in a 5,000 people 5,000 people for a it's a big number for a show. And that happened in a week. That means that whenever the attention is there, the time is right, the power that we have with social right now and with influence of content creators and the likes, it's incredibly important to the level that it's going to be disruptive for everybody else. So your business needs to become a creator to a certain extent, right?
I'm thinking about the grassroots kind of event building that situation in San Francisco was a couple of weeks. It's like, boy, how does that change the event industry if we can really do it grassroots and spontaneously? That's very, very different model.
So the biggest business in events, bear that in mind, the RX, we're talking about a $9 billion revenue sort of company that does just events, right? That's their product. They're a media company. They do content. Their business is data. It's not events. Like events is like the result of their data/media opportunity in the market. And big database, cross data, strong content. They have vertical publications in many cases. And then they monetize through events. The music industry, they monetize with events, as far as I know. There's no other monetization in there. Other, of course, advertising and all that, but selling records is gone. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's the opportunity that they have. So events are powerful.
Taylor Swift is a very good role model for that. Okay, let's give our audience a chance to get to know you a little bit more on a personal basis with three quick questions. Is there a CEO or a company that you think is a must follow today? It could be in the event industry or anything, but somebody who's like, boy, she or he's just a great follow.
Hey, listen, I'm going to be very biased on this one. My former CMO at Hopin, Anthony Cannata, now CEO of Audience Plus, who's actually building a product for every company to become a media company. And he has this vision of every company becoming a media company. And this is what we were building at Hopin together. And I think it's a must follow. He's a content powerhouse. I was in his podcast. He has like 4 different podcasts, 3 different video series. It's just an amazing opportunity for everybody in marketing and B2B. It's a must follow.
And do me a favor, just say his name and his company again.
Yes, Anthony Cannata, K-E-N-N-A-D-A, and the company's Audience Plus.
Audience Plus, that's a great one. Okay, now we're talking about tools. And I know you were at Hopin and you know all these event management tools and you've got a great report where you kind of talk about them, but is there a tool out there today that you think every company should be using?
That's a great question. I mean, I've actually messed around a little bit with AutoGPT. I don't know if you've seen that. It's been trending on Twitter for the past 2-3 days, which essentially opens up ChatGPT to go on the internet and do tasks for you. It's borderline scary, I must say. You need to have some capability, technical capability. It's not like a straightforward like ChatGPT experience. You have to run Python and all of that. So it was my geek side was super happy about it. But like the results of that, as you keep an eye on it, it's just crazy. What it can do for you is like searching for information, collecting information and producing documents out of it. It's just unbelievable. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, it's very sequential where it does the first task and it does the second task based upon the first task and the third task based upon the second. In fact, my social media manager just told me about it this morning. So it's where I learned about it. And then last question, your early career person out there, you're in the B2B tech industry, maybe you're in marketing or in sales, but they want to be a real influencer, a real thought leader. What advice do you give them at their early career so they can become a Julius Solaris someday or a Nick Mehta someday?
So when I moved to London in 2007, I was looking for a job in the events industry. I never got that job that I was looking for. I got rejected again and again and again from all the events companies in the events industry out there. And so social media was like exploding at the time. And I was like, okay, I'm going to invest in this all of my time and try to learn as much as I can. And this, I started a blog that became my career. I think we're witnessing a second social media moment with AI right now. So my recommendation is go deep. Go deep in that. Even if you don't become an expert in it, go deep in learning how to use it to boost your career. Because that's going to be an incredible competitive advantage compared to the old school, to all the sort of dinosaurs like us that are kind of trying, but we're going to see a kid coming through and they're just like, leaving us way behind. So, you know, this is the opportunity now, no question.
That is great advice. In fact, it's funny, I have three children who are kind of in that recent college graduate, and I send them all these videos and YouTube things and all the tools I see out there. And it's like, just throw yourself into this industry, because what you're learning today is going to make you stand out so much 3, 5, 10 years from now.
Absolutely.
Great advice. Well, Julius Solaris, thank you so much, the founder of Bold Push. And if people want to follow you, maybe sign up to your newsletter, where can they do that?
Absolutely. Insights.boldpush.com, or, you know, even easier, Julius Solaris on LinkedIn. That's my core platform where I, you know, share all my content. And then if you like that, join the newsletter. And then, you know, we'll see you at my events or around the world at a show for either technology or the events industry.
Well, Julius, thank you so much for being our guest on today's episode of the Metrics and Measure Up podcast.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
And to our listening audience, if you're enjoying conversations we have with guests like Julius and talking about the future of events for B2B SaaS, it would mean the world to us. Go ahead and subscribe to our podcast in your favorite podcasting app. Go ahead and give us that 5-star rating, because that allows us to amplify. And we actually hit number 4 last week on Apple Business Podcast. And it's because of you, the listeners, and great guests like you, Julius. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's Metrics to Measure Up podcast. If you would like to learn more about B2B SaaS metrics and benchmarks, please visit RevOpsSquared.com.